Support for WPR comes from Stone Harbor, a Door County resort and conference center with a restaurant and pub overlooking the historic Steel Bridge in Sturgeon Bay. Live music and event schedule at stoneharbor-resort.com. Support for WPR comes from Stoughton Health, an independent community healthcare organization, treating acute mental health disorders in adults age 55 and over, accepting many insurance plans. StoughtonHealth.com.
I don't think there's very many individuals that from Wisconsin who evoke more of a sense of pride than Aldo Leopold. His legacy is a conservationist and an author. Wonderful. It's alive and well. And there's a new film out called Green Fire, Aldo Leopold and a Land Ethic for Our Time. And you're going to have a chance to see it Friday night. Premieres on Wisconsin Public Television. We'll talk more about that as we visit today with our two guests who are heavily involved in the making of the film and who know an awful lot about Aldo Leopold. And I hope you'll join in as we talk about the man and the film. When did you first learn about Aldo Leopold? Has he influenced your view of nature and stewardship? I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on my Facebook page a photo or a question at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you as we visit with Kurt Meine. Kurt's a conservation biologist, writer based in Prairie du Sac. His doctoral dissertation was a biography of Aldo Leopold, published as Aldo Leopold, His Life and Work. Kurt currently serves as director with the Center for Humans and Nature, senior fellow with the Aldo Leopold Foundation in Baraboo, and as research associate with the International Crane Foundation. And he is Green Fire's on-screen guide. And Buddy Huffaker is Green Fire's executive producer. He's been the executive director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation since 1999, after joining the foundation as an ecologist in 1996. He's a national leader in the conservation movement. I think he was at the White House just yesterday, as a matter of fact, on something, some business relating to conservation. And great to have him with us as well to talk about Aldo Leopold. And again, I hope you'll join in with your own questions and comments as we move along today at 1-800-642-1234. Kurt, great to see you again.
It's a pleasure to be back, Larry.
Yeah, great to have you back. And, Buddy, welcome. It's your first time on, I believe.
I think I was here one other time with our ecologist, Steve Swenson. I can't remember quite what we talked about.
Was a while back. Well, today we're talking about Aldo Leopold and Green Fire. And I've had a chance to look at the film. And it's a beautiful film, as a matter of fact. I love how we've incorporated still photography, old film footage, the new footage, into just a marvelous looking production.
Well, thanks, Larry. Of course, you had to watch Kurt on screen for quite a few minutes as well. We try to touch him up a little bit as well. But
good luck with that.
We're really pleased with how the film turned out. It's actually won some awards for cinematography. So I think
beautiful.
It really speaks to just the quality and the beauty of the film. And I think it really, as was needed to match Leopold's eloquence and his own words. So it is a beautiful product, and we've been really pleased with the response we've gotten from audiences so far.
Yeah, I'd bet. Well, you know, there's been so much written about Aldo Leopold. Why was making Green Fire so important? And Kurt, maybe I'll turn to you first.
Well, sure. Well, it is the first full-length documentary done on Leopold. As well-known as he is, not only here in Wisconsin, but nationally and even internationally, there has never until now been a full film that explores his life and his legacy. So it was a chance to use this very different medium to tell his story and to reach a whole new audience.
Yeah, what does the Green Fire refer?
Well, that's the famous story and essay, Thinking Like a Mountain, is where it comes from, Leopold's phrase, Green Fire, referring to the experience he had when he shot early in his career and killed a wolf in what was then the Arizona Territory. And it was an event, of course, that marked him, but that would stay with him through his life until finally, many decades later, he would sit down and write what has become one of his best-loved essays, the essay called Thinking Like a Mountain in a Sand County Almanac.
Yeah, he was such a good writer. That wasn't his training, really.
No, not formally. I mean, he was one of our country's first professionally trained scientists, but writing was certainly an hobby and an interest from, you know, early on.
From day one.
Yeah, he wrote extensively, wrote lots of letters back to his family when he was in school on the East Coast, and clearly some natural gifts, but also he worked pretty darn hard at writing, and you can see...
Yeah.
Just how often he would go back and rework his material and make sure he got the message just as he wanted it.
And family was very important to him, and I was really glad to see that you got some family member that there are family members involved in the film. And his family, I think, nurtured him and encouraged his curiosity. And frankly, his going back to his parents, who did that when he was a child.
Well, in fact, Larry, I think the Leopold story we always, of course, focus on Aldo himself, but it really is a family story.
Yeah.
His parents, his siblings, and his kids, and now even several generations on. It's a remarkable family story, and so the film, we had a real opportunity to share a bit of that story and to weave it into the story of his professional accomplishment and his legacy. So it connects in so many ways, the film, with people. And you don't have to even be, I think, certainly not a professional conservationist, but I think in a very human level it connects with people because it tells this story of multi-generational commitment to the land, to understanding and enjoying and experiencing the natural world.
Yeah.
I might just add that, you know, we're so thankful that we got the film made when we did, because as you saw, Nina, his eldest daughter, was really a primary person and voice in the film. And as the kind of family storyteller, it was so important to have her voice in the film. And, of course, just last year we lost her. And so it was really timely that we were able to capture her and Carl and her younger sister, Stella. They all appear, and they're each remarkable in their own way. But many people here in Wisconsin knew Nina and were touched by her personally as well.
Yeah.
So we were really, really thankful and fortunate that we were able to get her story in the film.
She's a remarkable woman. I had a chance, the pleasure, privilege of serving on a few committees with her, and what a wonderful person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's fun to go around to other states and even overseas with the film because for us, like for you, Larry, it's a very personal, very direct connection mm-hmm. with this tradition that we're also proud of in Wisconsin. For others, they don't have quite that same personal connection, and the film gives us a chance to share at least a little bit of that with audiences, and it really makes a difference for people everywhere who see the film.
And maybe just to add on to that, I mean, I was just on... before I came in, listened to a voicemail, and there was a message from an individual who had seen the film, I don't remember even where, in another state, and he was so excited about it, and he wanted to share it with his children and his grandchildren. So it also helps us expand that sense of family and connection, and that's been one of the neat things is people who have seen the film and do want to make sure that their family sees it. To kind of consecrate their family values around nature and the outdoors.
We have Bob in Madison who has a comment or a question. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to ask your guests if they could interpret possibly what Leopold's opinion would be of the current legislation for the wolf hunt that will be coming up that we're going to be forced to endure, and then the rhetoric that's going around about a possible sandhill crane hunt as well. Seeing that the movie, which I've seen many times, I've taken many students down to the shack a number of times, and you know, seeing how that's going to affect the whole green fire attitude.
Mm-hmm. All right. Big question. Who wants to start? Kurt, do you want to start?
Well, sure. I'll start in a little bit. I had a feeling this question would come up, actually, because it has been in the news a lot. And these were two species that were very critical in Leopold's own development and thinking. And as I've watched and listened to the debate, I have to admit I've been a bit frustrated that it hasn't been the kind of conversation we're having hasn't been wide open, let's say that. But the thing I keep coming back to with Leopold, he was used to controversy in his own life. He dealt with a lot of very difficult conservation issues, but there were a couple constants. One, he always spoke from the very best science that he could. That was always where you started. Get the best information and share it as widely as possible. So I think that's our first obligation, is really to get a handle on the scientific dimension of this. And then we can get into the discussion of public policy and how science can inform that. And so Leopold understood that there were always competing values in society, and we had to make collective decisions. That's what the political process is supposed to do and supposed to help us work through. And recognizing, again, that he had himself a lot of competing interests, even internally. He was a hunter, but he was also a protector of game. That's a line we actually use in the film. And so there's not a simple answer politically, certainly. But unless we start with the science, we're not going to get very far. And if you don't have that conversation going on in an open way, it's going to be very difficult. So I think I'll just leave it at that. Maybe Buddy would like to comment further.
No, I think that's a pretty fair summary. I think, you know, again, the unfortunate part is there is an opportunity for a rich and productive conversation around conservation success stories. I mean, that there were 50 breeding pair in the state of Wisconsin when Leopold bought his farm outside of Baraboo, and now we have a population that, you know, at least we can talk about the potential to sustain hunting as a management tool, likewise with wolves. And yet that's not really the conversation we're having. We're having conversations that are each end of the continuum. And so, you know, I think it's very difficult to know what Leopold would say, and that he would be conflicted and he would be asking us to make sure we're asking the right questions and having a rich conversation to inform and shape the political process. So, yeah.
Thanks again, Bob, for calling. I want to give Jan a chance to join us from Wauwatosa. Hi, Jan.
Hello. How are you guys doing?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to share with your audience, I have to say I'm a little bit embarrassed that as a born and bred Wisconsinite, I knew nothing about Leopold until my husband, who is very much into the outdoors and conservation from Illinois, informed us as we were going down to go backpacking in New Mexico in 1998. They have the Elder Leopold Wilderness established over an area that's about a 3.5-hour drive southwest of Albuquerque, and it encompasses the Black Range, and I also believe it's adjacent to the Gila Wilderness. It's a beautiful area, not as rugged as the Rockies, but still very remote. We've been there twice for backpacking, both times. Didn't see another soul the entire time we were out. But what was disappointing was to see about 4 years ago, so about 10 years later, how the trails are really, the whole area is getting very not being maintained. Signs for trails are down, and we actually stopped into the ranger station at the Truth or Consequences on that second trip, and they just said, well, unfortunately, with the funding cuts in that area of our government, they just weren't able to devote time to trail maintenance. And I just wonder if there might be some mechanism for the state of Wisconsin to continue that honoring of Aldo through helping to maintain the wilderness and the beautiful area that was named for him.
Okay, well, one thing you, Jan, you should be, you should definitely take a look at the film, because New Mexico is featured in the film, Buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. And she's right. The Aldo Leopold Wilderness is adjacent to the Gila Wilderness, and Leopold was instrumental in coming up with the vision and shepherding the process to get it set aside in 1924 as our country's first wilderness area. That would predate the Wilderness Act by 40 years. So he was clearly ahead of his time. and the film and the prominence of that landscape in his thinking and professional career is profiled pretty extensively. And it is beautiful country. It's been a number of years since I've been down in there myself, since probably about 2000. So I can't speak to Jan's comment, but it's intriguing. Maybe we could have a kind of cross-cultural exchange where we could take people down to New Mexico and help work on the trails and likewise bring those folks up there that have been shaped by Leopold's thinking up to Leopold country here and the Leopold Shack and so forth. But it is a challenging time for natural resources conservation right now, given the budget constraints and the competing interests. And so, you know, I think it's either going to take citizens to step up and provide the kind of human resources and effort to make that happen, or we're going to have to rethink the financial picture of how we take care of these special places.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling. We're talking about Aldo Leopold and the new film that's out, Green Fire, Aldo Leopold and a Land Ethic for Our Time. Our guest, Kurt Meine, conservation biologist, who has written a biography of Aldo Leopold. Buddy Hafliker is Green Fire's executive producer and executive director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation. I'm Larry Mueller. Michelle Good, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking with our guests today, Kurt Meine and Buddy Hafliker, who are heavily involved in the film Green Fire, Aldo Leopold and a Land Ethic for Our Time. It's going to be broadcast at 8 p.m. on Friday, this coming Friday, on Wisconsin Public Television. So I hope you have a chance to view it. And I'm sure it'll probably be rebroadcast. But for sure, the premiere is 8 o'clock Friday evening, this Friday, as a matter of fact, on Wisconsin Public Television. Jim in Winnebago County has a question or comment. Let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Morning, Larry, Kurt, and Buddy. This is Jim Perry. Buddy, you know part of my story. I shared it with you when we premiered Green Fire up at UW Fox in the Fox Cities last year. In 1968, I was an undergrad at UW-Madison as a biology student, zoology student, and we read the San County Almanac. Well, I'd grown up in central Wisconsin as a predator hunter, and I read the San County Almanac, and I read Thinking Like the Mountain. And it really caused me to rethink the whole issue of what I was doing. I remained a hunter, but I stopped hunting predators. I decided the only thing that I was going to hunt was things that I could eat. And as a consequence, I sort of developed a whole new perspective and a new appreciation for every organism in its environment. And it was really Leopold and San County Almanac that changed that for me. Later on, during the 70s and the early 80s, I lived in Riley. Well, come to find out that one of the places that I was pheasant hunting is what was the Riley Game Cooperative at one time. And I was pheasant hunting on it, and it was just uncanny that I was hunting with a German short-haired pointer. So it seems like if there is a fate in life and some sort of link that is made for you, Leopold was my link. When I was in my professional job, I had a picture of Leopold in my office on my wall, and I would ask people that would come in if they knew who that was. And interestingly enough, I got some responses like, it looks like it might be your father. There's an awful lot of similarity in your appearance. I said, well, no, it wasn't my father, but it was somebody who was actually a philosophical father to me. So I would encourage everybody to take the opportunity to see Green Fire. It's the most amazing film, and if anybody else can have the influence that I had, or that Leopold could influence anybody else the way he did me, life is all good.
Just would add, Jim was is the just past dean of UW Fox Valley, so it's just one success story or example of how Leopold has had this ripple effect in our society. I mean, the number of students that Jim has influenced, you know, is in the thousands, and so there are stories like this that are just wonderful to hear and capture as a San County Almanac has influenced individuals' thinkings, and they have gone on in turn to influence others.
And the film is available. You know, we're going to be able to have a chance to see it but you can also purchase it, can you not?
Yeah, if you go to www.greenfiremovie.com, you can purchase it. We also have information about other community showings that are happening across the state, across the country. I mean, we've had 800 community showings already across
wow.
the country, including 16 countries. And so it's been really exciting to see this kind of grassroots movement. Some, we had nearly 1,000 people at the premiere a year ago in Albuquerque, New Mexico, but sometimes it's 50 people in the basement of a public library. And Kurt's been to so many of these, the energy and the sense of community that gets built around a community showing is really powerful as well. So you can find a showing in your community if you can't catch the Wisconsin Public Television screening. And might just also put a plug in that we're really looking for input and feedback from educators. And so we have an opportunity, if you watch the film while it's on public television, and provide our provide feedback about how we could adapt it, what kind of resources educators need to use the film in the classroom. We'll provide them a free educational screening license so that their school can show it as many times as they want to students of all ages. So that's a request we'd have for help.
And then perhaps, yeah, based on what you hear, perhaps put some materials together.
Exactly, yeah.
Excellent. Very good. Sherry in Delafield, it's your turn. Hi, Sherry.
Hi there. I just wanted to welcome your guests and thank them for their ideas. I think Buddy might have just covered my question about putting out some of the website information.
Yeah.
And
yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, and the website for the Aldo Leopold Foundation and maybe how people can visit that really remarkable site in Baraboo.
Yeah, thanks, Sherry. Yeah, we always welcome folks to come see us in Leopold Country, just outside of Baraboo. You can find directions and hours of operation and those kind of things at www.aldoleopold.org. Basically, we're open Monday through Saturday, pretty much 9 to 5, and we have self-guided opportunities to see our new visitor center that was built out of trees that Leopold planted, as well as the historic shack and farm that was the inspiration for Leopold to write Sand County Almanac. So we have, again, we have people come from all over the world to visit that site. I think last year we had people from contingents from 17 different countries come to the Leopold shack.
Very cool. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Roy in Appleton. Your turn. Hi.
Yeah, good to hear your voice again. I was with you last Friday for Garden Talk at UW Fox Valley, and I saw Green Fire last night, and it had a really strong emotional appeal to me. And what it did, it took me back 55 years to when our family established a piece of wilderness in northern Oconto County. And when we went into that land, there we had no electricity. We cooked over the outdoors. We had only the shell of a cabin. And today that land is 87 acres of trust on 3,700 feet of frontage on a lake. And that frontage has not changed, even with the building of cabins far back from the water in those 55 years. Jim Perry's classes came to our land where they did biological field trips, increment borings of trees. We've had numerous Boy Scouts come in and camp. But the Aldo Leopold ethic struck my life, and I think the film not only evokes the conservation ethic, but an emotional appeal that we all need to have for our resources and the whole concept of good science, especially in this environment we are in Wisconsin right now with polarization over issues. But I just wanted to make that comment.
Roy, thank you so much. And comment, Kurt, you want to...
That's a really great comment, and so, again, evocative of the ripple effect of Leopold and how in Wisconsin we have this special culture of conservation. It exists elsewhere, and we have a chance to touch base with that in other places, but there's something about the home ground here in Wisconsin that has nurtured this over the generations, and stories like that, Buddy and I have a chance to hear them all the time, and I know you do, too, on the radio show here, too, Larry. It's just a very personal and connected way of doing conservation. And, you know, I just, those stories always kind of just take me back and it reminds me of why Wisconsin is so special. when it comes to this legacy and how sometimes we may take it for granted. Yeah. But the film really tries to, again, evoke that for not only our home audience, but for audiences wherever they may see it.
Yeah.
And, Larry, I think one of the things that we try to do with the film is have it be hopeful and mm-hmm. You know, have an optimistic message. So many times, you know, when we think about the future and the state of conservation that may not be living up to quite what we'd like or think needs to be done, there is this sense of despair. And yet, you know, just like the last caller, there are people all over the place, Wisconsin and beyond, that are doing good things for the land and for the community, urban gardening. And so we just tried to present all the positive energy that is still happening out there that, again, kind of emanates, at least in some way, shape, and form, from Leopold.
By the way, you can join in with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show and you can post a question or a comment there. Chris from Oak Creek wonders if, via email, if Greenfire is going to be shown on Milwaukee Public Television.
Well, we certainly hope to. Chris, maybe you can contact Milwaukee Public Television directly and encourage them to show it. We've had a really good and important and valuable relationship with Wisconsin Public Television from the beginning of the project. And so in working with them, wanted to air it first on their station, mm-hmm. and then we're working with them to take the program out to all the public television stations across the country. And so Milwaukee will be
on the list.
On the list, yeah. And then we're hoping Earth Day a year from now, it'll be all across the country on public television stations.
Mary in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Yes, I was wondering if you could give a quick sketch of if there were any remnant prairie when Leopold went to the shack, and prairie expansion, and also I think the shack is located by the Wisconsin River, and could you give a sketch of wetland species? If that's the case,
on the Leopold land,
yeah, by the shack, mm-hmm,
sure. All right, Kurt, start with you.
Well, sure, very quickly. You know, Leopold purchased the property along the Wisconsin River in 1935, and it was just
how many acres are there? It's
well, originally it was 80 acres that he purchased, but it's expanded, and it's part of a cooperative with neighboring landowners, too, and we're up to how many?
Well, in fact, we just got a grant from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and their stewardship fund that's going to allow us to protect another 300 acres surrounding the original farm by one of the original founders of the Leopold Memorial Reserve. So the land that the foundation will now own is about 600 acres, and then there's additional buffering lands and state land not far from us. So, but it started with Leopold's original purchase in 35.
And that purchase came right on the heels of the creation of the University Arboretum here in Madison, which Leopold helped dedicate and which he helped to shape the vision of, which was, in fact, to undertake restoration of prairies, wetlands, savannas, and forests. And this was a unique undertaking. I'm sure that story is familiar to many of your listeners. But Leopold borrowed that idea, in a sense, and applied it to his own private landscape up there. And they did, in fact, begin their restoration work by looking around to see what were the remnant prairies that they could draw upon for seeds and so forth, and it was pretty hard to come by back then. There was not a lot of prairie left in Wisconsin, and the restoration movement had not yet really begun. Leopold was really one of the pioneers in that whole field, and so they would begin their efforts by scouring the landscape for whatever little remnants of prairies we could find. And fortunately, they did have some amazing colleagues in the botany department here in Madison and elsewhere around the state that helped to create that new field. And really, it was the prairie restoration experiments at the Arboretum that gave rise to what is now an entire new field of conservation
work. Yeah, absolutely. What do we know what Aldo paid for that 80 acres?
We used to say it was $8 an acre, and then a few years ago we did a little bit more extensive historical research and found out that that number wasn't quite true. It was actually closer to $4 an acre, essentially the back taxes.
$320.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and it was not.
That was probably quite a bit of money then, though.
Yeah, yeah. You know, family of five, single income.
Yeah. So yeah, that was no small piece of money.
Might just add quickly because I have a message here. A practice that Leopold started on the farm as soon as he purchased it was recording the blooming of plants and the arrival of migrating birds and wildlife events, a study called phenology. Mm-hmm. And then when Nina retired back to the area in the mid-70s, her and her husband resumed those studies. And then later she published a paper that documented the change and that spring was coming earlier, according to that data. And so we continue that practice. Of the 59 events that have occurred so far this year that we track, 37 of them have had their earliest ever date.
Wow.
In the history of that study. And just to the caller's question, some of the species then that we're watching are the Baltimore Oriole, large flowered bellwort, brown thrasher we're waiting to arrive at our place, false rue anemone, meadow anemone, prairie buttercup. So that's just a sampling of what the landscape. It's a very diverse landscape along the river there. And again, really encourage folks to come see us and get outside and take a walk.
Absolutely. We have an email from Mary. How can we overcome the sense that acting to counter climate change, the loss of biological diversity, toxicity of air, water, and soil is hopeless? How would Leopold prioritize our efforts?
Buddy and I are smiling at each other because it reminds us of a line that some of us quote sometimes when we're feeling despair ourselves in a letter after World War II, which you can imagine was a time of dark shadows.
Yes.
He wrote to a very close colleague of his and included this line relevant here. He said, "Although the situation is hopeless, it shouldn't prevent us from doing our best." And that's kind of our line we use when we need to perk each other up. Leopold was a remarkably resilient person, even as well-informed as he was about all these major trends back then, and as if he were around today, he would be, no doubt. He somehow had a way of always looking forward, of always picking himself up and encouraging others to take action. And so I guess for me that always is the bottom line. It's the amount, when you get the information coming at you like this, as we all do, you can either deny it, mm-hmm. or you can avoid it, or you can try to escape it. But taking after Leopold, one of the things that most impressed me is how his response is always to take action, always to do something positive, always to encourage others, always to share information, always to encourage discussion. And that's what kept him from feeling that sense of despair. And that's what we also tried to build into the film, that we don't shy away from the big issues that the email mentions and others, but we also didn't want to discourage people. We wanted to mm-hmm. say, you know, the first thing is to always go out there and connect in some way with another person, with the land, with organizations that are doing the good work. And it's going to take that kind of collective commitment to address any of these, much less all of them. So, that's the fate mm-hmm. of being a conservationist in this world. And Leopold provides a good model of positive response, but realistic as well.
Joe in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi there, guys. I was just wondering if I could pose a question to either Kurt or Buddy. I'm an undergraduate history major here at UW-Eau Claire, and I recently discovered Leopold, and I found him so fascinating. I've been a big hunter and fisherman all my life, and I decided to write my undergraduate capstone essay on Leopold and the evolution of his thinking on hunting and fishing throughout his life. And I know that before Leopold encountered his experience with the mother wolf, in which he shot her and killed her, and saw the fierce green fire fade from her eyes, he was kind of a ragtag, you know, shoot everything in sight kind of hunter. But then after that experience, he became much more of a conservationist. And Kurt, if you could correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that that was in 1909 that that happened.
Yeah, it was. In fact, we didn't have, the film tells the story, we didn't really have definite proof of when this important event in Leopold's life happened until, in fact, while we were making the film is when the evidence appeared. And it's important to know that he didn't change overnight. The moment stayed with him somewhere in the back of his mind, and he kept mulling over this for many, many years. And that's one of the things about Leopold's story that appeals to us, is he didn't have all the answers right. He didn't always see things the way he saw them in his maturity. And so it's a model of how we all can grow in the way we understand the world around us and how it works. And so his hunting practices evolved from when he was a boy, young adulthood, to his professional years, to his later years. And let me just quickly say that I'm delighted to hear you tell your story, how you came to Leopold and how with your interest in history. That was a real mark of Leopold's viewpoint as well. He was a deeply, deeply appreciative of a historical understanding of these things so that we can understand how they do change and how we as individuals, but also we as a culture, change and evolve in our way of thinking about these things.
Of course, sure. Kurt is slightly biased because he has a history degree as well. So Joe, you do have the potential of a bright future. Might just
go.
Also add, you might want to read Skydance, the essay in a Sand County Almanac, where he kind of talks about his love for woodcock and how over the course of his lifetime he kind of chose not to hunt woodcock as heavily because he also wanted to make sure he could watch them dance in the spring.
Wow. Thank you, Joe, for calling. A caller couldn't stay on the line but wanted to know how she can see the movie. She lives outside Wisconsin, can't wait a whole year. Is there a place to preview it or see excerpts, or will it be on Netflix eventually?
Yeah, well, that's of course the feedback we want to hear. You can't wait a year. Go to www.greenfiremovie.com. About a 10-minute trailer is on there, and you'll get a really good sense for the quality of the film and its tenor. There'll also be a page on there where you can see where the film is showing in communities all across the country. If you can't wait that long, you can organize your own showing. We have a whole resource kit for putting on a community showing, or you could just buy your own copy for $20. We're still investigating the whole Netflix and Redbox and all those kind of opportunities. It's a pretty complex world about how to get a film actually out onto the general retail market. But hang with us and visit the website to take action as quickly as you can.
Thank you very much for calling and for that comment. And, guys, thank you so much. But the time flew by here. And we'll look forward to that premiere broadcast of Greenfire, 8 o'clock, 8 p.m. Friday, April 20th, on Wisconsin Public Television. Kurt, Buddy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
Larry, it's always a pleasure to come.
Well, great to have you both back. Kurt Meine, conservation biologist, writer, based in Prairie du Sac. He currently serves as director of the Center for Humans and Nature, senior fellow with the Aldo Leopold Foundation in Baraboo, research associate with the International Crane Foundation. And Buddy Huffaker is Greenfire's executive producer, been executive director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation since 1999. Great. I hope you have a chance to see the film. If not, Friday night, then go online, find out when you can, and maybe just order a copy. It's a great one of those films that you can have around and share with family and friends, for sure. Well, we've been talking about land ethic and conservation, but how does that connect with agriculture? Daphne and Taylor Holterman will be coming up next to talk about their experiences on the farm and the opportunities for young people in agriculture, and talk about family farming with them. That's next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.